Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, the 27th of August, 1998. In the fireside room this morning, we have Karen Ward. Today's session number is 98.4, and it's titled, Making Christians in the Post-Christian Era. Let's listen in.
Ooh, I thought would be a very provocative title. Kind of draws to mind, you know, like the bakers in the back of the kitchen making bread. What is making Christians about? For the last 6 or 7 years, our church has been involved in a small way in a new ministry that's very, very old ministry in the church called the catechumenal process. And that's a big word, catechumenal. Kind of scares some people off. But we try to preserve the word which comes to us from the early church. We have a lot of similar words that we use all the time in the church. The word catechism, catechetics, come from the same Greek root word, which means to sound in the ear or to echo. And catechumenal process is the way that the early church process the early church used to basically to make Christians from scratch. In the world of the early church, people were not raised as Christians. The church was a new phenomenon, and most of the people that came to Christ came as adults. So here we are in 1998 in North America, where our people in our evangelism staff office tell us that 50% of the population of North America is not Christian in terms of the definition that they're not baptized or they're not going to church on a regular basis. Even though about 70% when you ask people on surveys if they think they have a Christian affiliation, and usually what that means is like, well, my grandmother went to a church once, so I think I'm Lutheran. That doesn't mean they have any real current affiliation. The 70% claim affiliation, but according to evangelism people, 50% of the population is quote unquote unchurched. And I won't try to get any deeper into those statistics because I'm not in that department. But that's a quite an alarming or a startling figure for with a country that goes around saying we're a Christian nation, quote unquote. There sure are a lot of people in this context that are not Christian. And in many ways, we're almost going back to a situation that was similar to that of the early church, where Christianity was not assumed. The culture no longer supports Christianity as it once did. Like back in Europe, and maybe even still going on sometimes in Europe, where the church and the culture are kind of closely intertwined, where people take catechism classes in schools. Church and state are kind of entwined together, but here in the United States, that's different. We can no longer look to the culture to assist in the process of propagating the faith. And maybe in the past in the United States, that was more true. But as we go into the future, we cannot look to the state to help us in our task. And that's true of any religious group, whether it's Judaism or Islam or Buddhism. Pretty much the state is staying out of the religious enterprise. So it's up to us. It's up to the church to take care of the church's own traditions and to pass them on. It's interesting, you know, you get kids coming into vacation church schools and you assume, used to, could assume things like kids would know how to sing Christmas songs. People used to know Christmas carols. That's because, you know, we were assuming a Christian milieu. But those things are slipping away. A lot of kids, you know, come in, they don't know how to know the words to Christmas carols. Where else are they going to sing carols? They're no longer in the secular realm. You can't sing them at schools anymore. Christian tradition is basically going back to where it started, in the churches. And so it's our responsibility, once again, to propagate the faith without assistance from the culture, which I think is a great thing myself. I think it's freeing the church to take responsibility for itself without dependency on any other kind of agency. So how many of you were raised in the church? In some church, any kind of church? Mm-hmm. We have maybe one or two people that weren't raised in the church.
You weren't
raised in the church, right? Okay. And tell me about your congregations. I want some of you to talk about new people and how many new people you get in your church and where they're coming from. Do you have any people come in your churches that are not Christian in background or that are unbaptized?
In the family, Karen?
Into your congregations.
We do sometimes.
Yeah.
We have adults, you know, maybe couples that are married and maybe one of the spouses isn't baptized,
okay.
And so they get baptized before they're, or okay. And confirmed even.
Okay.
I'm sure we bring some into our church that are not baptized, basically through our
adults.
Sunday school program.
What about adults?
Yes.
That are baptized because the kids come. We had 870 kids in the Vacation Bible School this year.
Wow.
And 870, and we probably will have 1,000 or more next year, which is pretty scary space-wise. But a lot of those are neighborhood children. They built a new church 11 years ago, and then we added on this past year. But a lot of those children are bringing their parents in. So we do have some adult baptisms, and generally those are private, very seldom are during the service.
Are you getting some parents to bring their children because it's a handy babysitting?
They don't realize.
Or
their parents, I think, who are also inquisitive, or they're thinking, well, now, you know, when I was a child, I went, like you say, once or twice, or my parents did, but I didn't. I remember a time when parents were saying, I don't remember how many years ago I started hearing this, but parents would say then that, I'm not going to make the kids go to Sunday school. They have that choice when they grow up, and my thought is, how can they have that choice if they don't know anything other than a secular life? They can't go to church if they haven't had exposure to it. Right?
We're seeing an increasing number of adult baptisms in the ELCA every year, and numbers always on the upswing, and sometimes startling numbers of adult baptisms happening. And a lot of pastors are very concerned about what to do with these people coming in as adults to the church, because really a lot of what we've been geared to do in our church is to raise Christians, to raise them within the context of Christian families, or to transfer people. We're very good at that, taking in transfers. And most, when I say we, I'm really talking about all the mainline Christian churches, not just the Lutherans. We're very good at welcoming Methodists into the Lutheran church and teaching them about Luther, or welcoming Episcopalians into the Catholic church and teaching them about Catholicism. You know, basically moving Christians around. We're good at that. Or raising Christians within the context of a family. We're very good at that. How many of you? Yeah.
I've baptized very few people who are over the age of 45 because who are unchurched.
Yeah,
the unchurched probably were baptized. But under 45, in the 30s especially, that's getting into that era of the 60s when they were born. And that era was the beginning of that decline of, you just have to go to church.
Assumed.
And that's the era of people that I'm finding that I'm baptized.
Right, there's a lot of people in their 30s, 20s, 30s, and 40s that kind of missed that whole thing.
We have a unique situation in our church. We have a day school there. And the day school is open to the community and not strictly church people. And it's a window to a degree for participation in our church. Well, the children in there brought their parents because we involved the day school into certain activities that are involved in service.
Right.
And the parents were, they're in their 50s, late 40s I should say, and because these are adopted children. And they came to these services and were getting active, but the word that grabbed them after visiting with them, the word that grabbed them was the word grace. And the word grace is the one that they studied, and that's the thing that brought them in, as well as the children saying,
you know, Mom, Dad, you need to come. And they joined the church and were baptized as adults. And this guy looks like John Madden, you know, if you know who that is, the football player. And our pastor characteristically will take the child and walk him up the aisle and say some very nice things. And he wanted the pastor to carry him up the aisle.
That would be interesting. Yes, yes.
But that was an occasion where an outside effort brought an inside activity.
Right. Mm. There's a lot going on in the church. Very interesting. People are a lot talking about this category of people called seekers. People that have had no church background, but somehow these people are starting to find their way into our churches as newcomers, a lot of them adults. And what to do with these seekers. Some churches have what they call seeker services.
Oh, there he is.
where they try to organize a worship service around newcomers. And I find that's a very interesting phenomenon. But in terms of actually grafting people into the church, I don't think the seeker service thing is going to do it. Because basically it just focuses just on worship. Because there's a lot of people that come into the church as visitors and then go out the back door of the church.
Yeah.
Because seeker services really don't deal with grafting people into the body. It's basically the first step. And a lot of churches are doing this kind of seeker, have this opening to seekers, but they don't take it any deeper than maybe having some kind of a worship service that's supposedly seeker-sensitive. But that's only the first step. If we think about what we do with our young people, how we treat them in terms of their faith development and formation, we have a very long history in the Lutheran Church and in many other churches of catechesis for young people. I remember when I was confirmed, it took 2.5 years. And I was raised in church, of course, but still the confirmation process, I remember it to this day. All the things that I learned about Luther and the catechism and the Bible and the Ten Commandments and all the things you need to know to kind of navigate your way through life as a Christian, that was given to me when I was a teenager. And it formed a foundation in me that's still there. Do a lot of your churches have confirmation programs? What do you do in confirmation? Tell me about your confirmation programs a little bit. How long do they last? What do they do in confirmation with the young people? And why do you do it? Why do you have confirmation?
Why?
Why?
Oh, goodness.
Young people were raised in the church, most of them. Why do you have confirmation?
This is a question I've often asked because I taught confirmation. I did not try to teach the Old Testament because I was afraid of it in those days. But of course the second year, there's been a 2-year program and a 3-year program through the years, and since my experience it's been, it was a 2-year program at the time. So I found at the time teaching the Ten Commandments and the other necessary Luther things, the catechism in other words. I had one group that wanted to talk about the concern they had on drugs and sex and smoking and all those things. So I thought, well, I guess we're going to have to use that as our basis and then go into the Ten Commandments. And I'm not sure, because at that time I thought, it seems to me that if we started teaching the catechism at first grade level so that they could understand it, and every 3 years we increase their knowledge in a program, then we start over the next 3 years, they're ready for confirmation. Because my kids at 8th grade and then the next year 7th grade, for instance, where I had a problem with discipline the entire time, I think that they're at an age someplace in that area where it's hard for them to sit still and listen to these things because they're becoming worldly. And if we start them out at an early age and increase their knowledge as they can accept it, why wouldn't they be better off? And then perhaps what you're coming to, I don't know if you are or not, Karen, but if you're coming to the fact that you simply learn these things by rote, and what are they doing for you? You're not coming from there. Well, that's, okay. See, this is what I'm wondering, if they would learn it from the heart. Is that what I mean? You know, I mean, they will grasp it a lot better, and it's not, they're not just a bunch of rules to learn.
Somebody else.
Well, you know, years ago, we did learn the catechism when we were first, second, you know, all the way through Sunday school. It's kind of part of memorization, where our children, who are in their 30s now, did not learn, do a lot of memorization. And right. I don't know that, it probably meant, maybe it meant as much to them as it did to us, I don't know. But I know our church right now has been struggling and not having a very good program. Mm-hmm. Okay, and we have a new pastor, so we're hoping to.
I want to know about how long confirmation lasts in your church.
Oh, uh-huh. Now it's 2 years.
We've got, yeah. Anybody 1 year?
3 years.
Three years.
I think one of the factors, a neighboring congregation, Missouri Synod, St. John's Lutheran in Salem, they sat down and studied. They were our congregation. They realized that it wasn't having a long-term integration. And so they realized a lot of socialization needed to happen too. So they set up a program with retreats to where the seventh graders were involved with the eighth graders. And so they began with the retreat. They had two or three retreats during the year, and then entered one. And then that group prepared themselves for the next year, from the seventh graders, they became the eighth graders. So they integrated the socialization, the retreats, and the catechism.
Okay, got
all together, but they made it a.
All right, I'm not trying to get too deep into the youth process here. I'm just trying to lift out some components of camp confirmation,
But they found in the process of doing that, that these seventh and eighth graders were bringing their friends in from the community that were not Lutheran background.
Okay.
And that's unusual for catechism classes that they're so excited and integrated in that they got excited about bringing their friends in. Mm-hmm. So the group actually grew in catechetics.
Mm-hmm.
And to me that was amazing.
Okay, all right. Now what I'm just gonna lift some things out of what I've heard. All of your churches have some kind of confirmation. Whether or not you think it's could be improved or not, that's not where we're going to get into here. But you have it. You think it's valuable enough to have it for young people, most of whom who were raised in the church are in confirmation. It involves learning to be integrated into the community of faith. May involve some retreats, learning of basic concepts like Bible study, catechism, Ten Commandments, those sort of things. And yet this church, we persist in doing this ministry of integration and teaching with our young people who were mostly raised in the church. But if you take the care and nurture that we've provided for young people, which is great, it's great, what do we do for people who come in cold with no background?
Can I speak to my own case
Yes.
a little bit? I was not raised in the church. When I married my husband, I began going to a Lutheran church with him with no faith. Took an adult instruction class. Said, thank you very much, no thanks. Spent 21 years going to the church. Probably took me 15 years of those time before I went for communion. And all of a sudden, one Sunday, I said, I'd like to go for communion, not being baptized. During this entire 21 years, not one person in the church came up to talk to me, whether it be pastor, husband, or, of course, whether we had some friends. Not one person came up. I was not interested in just saying, yes, I believe. I have found since that I think what maybe adults need, they need that personal relationship with Jesus. I mean, it's not just that you walk into church and you say, yes, I believe. But all of a sudden, through the grace and the love, and then listening more, yes, I can got that gift of faith. And since then, another struggle that I have had is that I was 4 years old when I was baptized. Another
part that I'm having trouble with is that I wish to deepen my walk. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish to grow in this. And it's real hard in the church mm-hmm. to do that.
Okay.
I don't find anybody, again, that's willing to talk to me. Going to Bible study, I started one Bible study and it wasn't what I needed. I needed depth. So I searched and made a whole lot of phone calls on my own.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess another thing, once I do come to know the Lord, baptized in the church, immediately they started asking me to be on committees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, I'm
typical.
You know, we've got all kinds of education That's programs. We've got a lay school of theology that has three quarters. Would you be in charge of the education, Cindy? Would you be on this committee? You know, I'm a teacher. Would you teach Sunday school? And I kept saying no. You know, this isn't where I can be right now. Where I have to be is within myself and growing. And being comfortable with where I am. And I find it real hard, you know, and everything I've done myself. And maybe that's good because I'm making it personal and I keep turning to Him. Can you lead me? You know, I mean, I've read the C.S. Lewis and the Dietrich Bonhoeffer and the Imitation of Christ and the Confessions. I mean, it took me a month probably to go through the Confessions and the Way of the Pilgrim. And right now I'm just finishing, and the prayer and the Bible study, you know, I spend hours a day, and my husband can confirm this. But I find it difficult to know where to go. And a couple of times I've read things about spiritual directors, and, you know, I think, okay, where would you find a person like this?
Okay, well, this catechumenal process is designed to help do everything that you were just talking about.
Yeah.
In terms of new people coming in, how to deal with them, how to welcome them, and how to journey with them mm-hmm. as they come to faith.
Mm-hmm.
We're used to educating young people, but we're not used to dealing with adults on a spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm.
We're used to giving people things to do, or like, see, people come to the church and we want to sign them up to a committee, because that's all we know to do, is some kind of a utilitarian thing. And it's not bad, it's just that some people need space to find where God is leading them. They want to talk, they want mentoring, they want prayer, direction, not just to be signed up for a committee, which will come later. So this process, catechumenate, is seeking to give to adults, whether they're coming in new or coming back from the church, back to the church from a long absence, space to kind of take their faith and make it their own, and the congregation is there to walk with them. So we're going to watch a video now about some congregations in our church. We just made this video with High Off the Branch that are doing this catechumenal ministry, which basically gives the same care and concern that we give to children and youth, but doing it for adults. Okay.
There was an article in the Lutheran about I'm getting back to catechism now, where the kids would get a sponsor, an adult sponsor.
Yeah.
Was that? And follow them all through.
That's
the
right.
Well, this would be similar.
This is very similar. Alright, we're going to watch the video and we're going to talk about it. In the catalog now for Oxford. It's basically just to give congregations an introduction to catechumenate, what the concept is. And as the video said, we do training as requested by synods. So far we've trained 11 ELC synods out of 65. We still have a long way to go. And as bishops make requests, we come into the synod, and congregations from the synod are invited to send a team of two or three people. We need at least a pastor and two lay people to be a team from a congregation. Like I said in the video, one of the neat things about the catechumenate is it involves lay people in the task of making disciples. So it's not clerical. I mean, the pastor is needed, you gotta have the pastor involved, but the actual teaching, the leading of the small groups is done by lay people. And so we need people to come, you know, lay people from congregations with the pastor to form a team
that will begin the ministry in the parish. So if any of your congregations might be interested in this.
Can we do it without the synod's
Sure. I mean, this is just like the programmatic way we try to train. The synod's, they're doing their own training. There's usually, in every synod, there's some pastors that are already, they're doing this on their own. And there's many ways to train. This is just the ELCA programmatic approach to teaching people. This is a brochure about the process. And if you want to take this back, you need one or two copies. It just talks about the process. And not only to deal with adults, but looking at all of formation, from the parents of children to be baptized, to young people being confirmed, to adults. And looking at that under the same kind of process umbrella of formation for faith, no matter what the age the candidate is. And it's got information about the process, whether it's for parents of children, youth, or for adults being baptized, and the resources that are available on the back page, the Augsburg resources and the video and everything else. And so I have a couple more articles if you're interested. There's some, pass these around, take one if you want one. It's an article on catechumen that we did for our worship publication last year. Every congregation got a free copy, but sometimes this packet doesn't make it past the circular file in many church offices. So it kind of gives an overview of catechumenal process. And there's many other churches doing this. The Methodists are doing this now. Just started a few years ago. The Presbyterians, I have a meeting with them in September to get them started on this for the longest. They call their process RCIA, Rite of Christian Initiation for Adults. The Mennonites are doing it. It's just starting to catch on. And it's not a big movement in the Protestant churches yet. It's growing. But the Catholic Church, this is the standard way you enter the Catholic Church as an adult. That's just the way. That's what they do. For us, it's not a requirement. It's just congregations that are interested in this can do it, and those that aren't don't have to. They can keep doing whatever it is they're doing. But this is a different way, new way of looking at formation ministries.
Then that will probably answer my question, because I was going to say, I noticed that Bishop said something about the fact that for the ELCA Church, and I thought, what about the MS?
Missouri Synod.
Missouri Synod is doing work on catechumen. We've had some joint events with Missouri, and we're at the point now that they're developing their own materials.
Oh, they are.
We worked on the rites together. The Missouri Synod was involved, and so is the Canadian Lutheran Church. So this booklet of the rites, we have three booklets: introduction, a catechist book, we have this rites book, and we have a new one coming out on sponsors for a series of resources to help congregations. But basically, the process is owned by the congregation, and it looks different in every congregation. And it's called something different in every congregation. Like, for example, Sarah calls their process The Way. Penny Ridge calls it Journey of Faith. The catechumen is a technical term for what it is, but most parishes wouldn't call it the catechumen because people would, it's the process we're trying to teach, not the technical names. But
that's sort of
congregations need to make it their own. Yes.
I'm involved with the Catholic Church in our city, and I attend the Easter Vigil.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where that flame was. And they go outside, and that's Lutheran, of course.
Yeah.
They start the service of the vigil
service
outside.
Of fire. Yeah.
They bring in the light, they have the candles, and they have this ancient rite being done. And during the rite, during the service, the vigil, they have the people who are going to be baptized and received as as already been baptized. And in this church that I frequent, they have a baptismal font like this, and you walk into it, go down a little bit, you get poured over, you don't get immersed. And I just absolutely love to go to that service,
it's
because
incredible.
Here's 8, 10, 12 people being baptized, maybe 20 more joining from other Protestant churches, or reaffirmation of the Catholic faith, I suppose, and some infants, and people are sponsors, and they wear robes, and they have colors, but all before that was the catechumen. So the Lutherans are following closely to the RCIA.
In a way, we model, everything's modeled on RCIAs, but ours has been Lutheranized, and this is a Lutheran process. And they teach catechism, and we teach our own way. And the Methodists do the same process, but they teach Wesley, they teach Methodism. The process is the same. The content is filled in by the particular denomination. And it involves that renewal. It's really a congregation that does this. The entire parish will change. That's why some pastors are afraid to try it, because it really will change the whole character of your congregation. Because it involves everybody in making disciples. Sponsors, catechists, you know, people, even the people that are not directly involved are involved, because the catechumens come before the congregation on a regular basis as they prepare. So everybody's watching these new people and seeing them grow and formed in their faith as they go along until they get baptized. So you cannot avoid the new Christian. They're not hidden away in a pastor's class where no one sees them. They appear one Sunday as members and people wonder where they came from. It's not that. It's like baking bread. I mean, everybody's involved in kneading these people and watching them come out of the oven. And it just, they're like leaven in a loaf, and they just bring life and energy to a parish. It's amazing what it can do. Brings baptismal renewal too. Congregations start doing Easter vigils, start baptizing at festivals when you get a lot of people together. People start to look forward to their baptism.
Karen, I give every baptized baby a candle.
Yeah.
And I say, you know, light it at the baptism.
Sure.
I have a feeling those candles have never been lit, because I have never really pushed it. I've never done it like, I was baptized on maybe November 11th or something like that, some close to the day. I should bring that out at that time and say, I'm baptized.
And one thing the catechumenate does is it puts baptism and baptismal ministry before the congregation on a permanent basis.
Now, was this thing that you just did in Mosaic?
There was a segment. We did a short version for Mosaic.
Because if you get
the 8 minutes,
if you get the last Mosaic,
right,
just order it.
Yeah.
Not only will you see this, most of it.
You can't just order it. You have to order the whole series.
No.
They won't give single. I mean, you have to be a Mosaic is a subscription thing, and your congregation has to subscribe.
To subscribe and then do
what
you want.
Yeah.
But at any rate, get that, because there's another segment by John Broughton, on John Broughton from Mesa, doing the baptismal ministry, laying it out, and so it's another step of this thing.
Right, it's the first step, which we would put under. Because the catechumenal process, the congregation can use this with everybody. You can do it with, it assumes you're doing it with the families of children to be baptized. So the families would go through a catechumenal what process as they're preparing for their child to be baptized. So there's, you know, what you're talking about is just the same thing, just without a label attached to it. So you can read this at your leisure. It talks about the three different ways to do it. Baptism of infants and younger children, baptism of adults and older children, and then affirmation. So those people coming back to the church that may have been baptized when they're a kid but never really went to church, and here they are as a 30-year-old coming back to the church, or they've had a baby, or a lot of times people go through the process that have been members of churches all their lives, but there's a life crisis, a divorce, a death in the family, a retirement, some kind of a change that makes them want to reevaluate or kind of go deeper into their faith, and so they would go through the affirmation process. Just a time to, kind of like the woman said, a time out to kind of take stock of faith in a group, small group with other Christians and or other new people coming in. So it can be used for a variety of different situations. So thank you. I think we're out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. It's one of my favorite things.
Statistically, I should assume it would be simpler if the Synod organized some of these and
Synod's
a number of different churches.